Brigadier Trevor, real one. How was it that you first went to Korea, Brigadier Trevor?
Well, I'd been appointed brigade major of a new brigade forming in Colchester in 1949. And this was a 29 infantry brigade. We started from scratch and started raising the staff. And first, we only had one battalion, which was the... which is the Royal Ulster Rifles, stationed in Colchester, and also the Gloucesters. Shortly afterwards, we got in the Bedfords and Harps Regiment, and we were starting training for a job anywhere in the world. We were a sort of fire brigade at that time. In spite of having an enormous army with a reserve, with a national servicemen, but with incidents going on all around the world, there was no reserve in England to take part in any special task. And this was to be the fire brigade to go anywhere at short notice. It was, I think, bank holiday of 1950 when suddenly the Korean War started. And I was on holiday at the time and heard it on the radio, and I thought, well, possibly we could be going there in due course.
Did it take you completely by surprise?
The war?
Yes.
Yes, completely by surprise. No one knew when you realised the North Koreans suddenly attacked out of the blue and crossed the frontier that this was an extraordinary thing to happen. So I went back to Colchester, and sure enough, before long, Great Britain decided to send a force to Korea from England. Already, 27th Brigade in Hong Kong had sent troops there. They were the Middlesex and Argyll and Southern Highlanders. We found we had a national serviceman in our brigade, and really the War Office decided that this would not be a strong enough force to go and wanted to make it as strong as possible, and I think for only about a third time in history called up the reserve. And so reservists were brought back off the reserve to join their units in Colchester. The Bedfords had been very weak, and they'd found they couldn't raise enough soldiers. We were withdrawn from our force, and to make up our 3rd Battalion, the Northumberland Fusiliers, who were the demonstration battalion at the School of Infantry, were brought in instead.
What was the weakness of the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire?
Well, the CEO always said he wasn't ready to go anywhere because he was so green and young, the troops were. And I think afterwards he much regretted it because, after all, they had just as many reserves as anyone else, and it was going to be a reservist army anyway and not be the national servicemen. It was really, from the reservist point of view, it was a great shock to them. Many of them had just been released from the army or been released 3 or 4 years before, and never even told their wives they were on the reserve, ever been in the army. And some had just bought businesses, had got into new employments, and overnight they were called up to go to a war in Korea. Some of them had been prisoners of war already in the Far East. Their guards had been South Koreans, and here were they going to fight in Korea. So it wasn't an extremely popular move.
Did they seem bitter about it?
Some of them, of course, were very bitter, and some of them, when I spoke to them, and other people spoke to them, the hard stories they told you what they just bought, a farm, or just done this, something, some small shop, and suddenly to be called up seemed really totally bad luck. But of course they were on reserve and had to do what they were told.
What were the main problems for you, apart from the ones you've already mentioned?
Well, the first problems, of course, was we had to weld together this sort of new brigade into a new force with a lot of new troops. And Brigadier Brodie, our brigadier, we arranged to have a large exercise up at Stamford Training Centre. It's in Norfolk. And we went up there and did a test exercise to try and weld us together. It was 3 days, good exercise, and that got us in some sort of order. Very shortly afterwards, we arranged to get to see all our vehicles, because we wanted a lot of additional vehicles for this force to go to Korea, and the brigadier very wisely said, "I'd like to see them first." Oh, they said, "They're going to put them on the boat, you'll get them in Korea." And he wisely said, "No, we'll see them here first and see what they're like." You'd be surprised what they were like. Some had no windscreens, very few had any heating system whatsoever, and some had been last used, I should think, at El Alamein. Anyway, by getting the vehicles and trying them out, at least we could try and improve them. They'd come from base depots in Scotland and elsewhere, and the vehicles were, of course, should have been four-wheel drive, but of course most of them weren't. So this was sorted out. At least we improved the standard of vehicles we were going to get. It was surprising, you see, it was the first time an expeditionary force had been sent out of England for a long time. And in spite of the fact the war had only taken place, 5 years before, things seemed to have got a bit out of hand and changed a lot. And, you know, we didn't seem very efficient.
How had things got out of hand? What exactly do you mean?
Well, they seemed to be, you know, in the war, one could call on anything you wanted, 1945. But here we were, 5 years apiece. The greatest difficulty in getting good vehicles and good kit, and getting sort of third-rate stuff. The second thing was cold weather clothing, and we drew this up, and we got a woolly cap comforter and a large jersey, a very nice jersey, khaki jersey, a string vest, long johns, which everyone laughed at, and most people thought they'd never wear those, which is a large woolly pants, you know, down to the ankle, and some very good boots made of Sule Vibron, they call it, a rubber sole boot, I think they were. I can't remember whether they were or not, but they were a good boot, and that was the lot, other than your greatcoat, which we had already, and that was our cold weather kit. Well, then we had a little embarkation leave, and we embarked on the, I think it was the Empress of Britain, or some big liner, which had been taken over as a trooper, with 45 field regiment, Royal Artillery.
You didn't say anything about the arms you took.
The arms were the ones we had, standard weapons, as used in World War II. Nothing special, but the brigade was composed of the three battalions, which I mentioned before, 45 field regiment, a light attack battery, which could be used in an anti-tank role, a 4-inch mortar battery, run by the Royal Artillery, a a squadron of flamethrower tanks of the Royal 7th Royal Tank Regiment. These were crocodile tanks, which were obsolescent and in poor condition. We also had 57 Company Royal Army Service Corps, as it was then, a field ambulance, and workshops, and the usual supporting services. We were fully up to strength in every way, and we set sail, in our case, on the Empress of Britain for Korea. It's a long journey, and most people had no idea where Korea was before the war, and the great thing was to get there in time before it ended, because what had happened was the North Koreans had attacked very suddenly and rushed through South Korea right down south to Busan, which is a southern port. Time, a small perimeter was protecting Busan and was held by 24 infantry division of the United States Army and 27 brigade, two battalions, had also been put inside the area and held it. Well, as is remembered, it looked as though this was going to fall and the Busan was going to collapse. But with a great landing made up the Incheon, on the Incheon, by the United Nations forces, the sea landing made at Incheon, quite close to Seoul, right up in the middle of the country, between the 15th and 25th of September, was highly successful and caused the North Korean army to withdraw, and they started to disintegrate, and they lost over 100,000 prisoners during the withdrawal. And it looked as though we, on our way out there, were going to arrive too late to take part in any war.
So you arrived after the Incheon landing?
Yeah.
Can you remember the month which you arrived?
Yes. Our journey out took between 5.5 to 6 weeks, and it was a long way to go. We got shore leave at Egypt, one day walking march there to get loosened up, and again in Singapore we got a evening off there. Are you interested in that?
Yes.
It was very nice to get ashore and to release all these soldiers who were pretty senior. They were reservists after all, an average age of about 28, much older than normal soldiers, who'd been right through the last war. And we released us for leave in Singapore that evening. Well, as you can imagine, getting loose in Singapore with the bright lights and the booze, by the time we came to come back to the ship, there was riotous scenes on the docks. The soldiers, we had a tremendous fun, and it was quite difficult to get them come on board again, especially as the OC troops on the ship had been extremely unpopular and treated these old soldiers rather like children. In fact, they had to sit to attention whenever he came round lunches on dinners and meals. They had to sit to attention at the table, something I've never seen before anywhere, in the army anywhere.
So
they're pretty hostile with the OC troops, and anyway, it took till 5 o'clock in the morning before they decided to embark. It wasn't a mutiny, It was just a bit of showing their indignation at the OC troops.
Had the MPs had to be called out?
Well, they didn't bother. They were just sitting on the dockside there, shouting and singing. And we got them on board about 5 o'clock in the morning. Well, that was the last landfall until we hit Pusan. There we were met by an enormous American band with pipes, with trumpets and trombones playing, I think, 20th century blues or some non-military tune. And we realized we were under American influence.
What were your impressions of Korea when you first arrived?
Well, it seemed a very normal sort of port, and quite busy, and we were immediately put into a train with most of the windows broken, and we set off north to go to Taegu, T-A-E-G-U.
Was it cold when you arrived?
No, wasn't cold at all, and we were in normal clothes, and we were set in this train overnight, and before we set off, we were going through the area which had been evacuated by the North Koreans. And with the sudden withdrawal of the North Korean army, we were told there were at least 40,000 of them acting as guerrillas in the country through which we were passing. And we asked where they were, and they said, "We don't know where they are, but we know they're about 40,000 we can't find. So you may be attacked."
Did they launch an attack?
No, there's no question about it. We never saw them. I don't think the Americans knew where they were. We certainly didn't.
Were the Americans making any attempt to winkle them out?
Well, the Americans, you see, those who had been in the bridgehead had moved up north rapidly, and the ones from Incheon had moved up north, and they were then across the parallel and moving well up north. So we were well behind the advancing army.
What happened to you at Taegu when you got there?
Well, at Taegu we refitted and got ready to take our place in the line. And we went off through Seoul, which was the capital. And this has been already passed through twice. Once by the North Koreans coming down south, who had looted the place. And once by our troops going north. So this is number two, second time to go through. And, of course, most of the place has been badly damaged, very badly damaged. And we crossed over a magnificent floating bridge. This is one of the remarkable things which I'd never seen reported. This bridge was flown in from America, a pontoon bridge, and laid across the River Han. Of course, all the bridges have been destroyed by both by the North and South Koreans. And over this floating bridge, which took vehicles, we went across the River Han into Seoul. We then took up a position north of Seoul and started moving north. I, being the chief of staff of the brigade, or brigade major it was called in those days, thought I'd better go and find out how to do my job in Korea. And so I went down to Kimpo Airport to try and get a flight up north to go and see 27 Brigade, who were at that time right up in the north of Korea, within 20 miles of the River Yalu. I went down to the airport, and all you have to do was to go and book yourself in and ask, was a plane going to Pyongyang or anywhere you could think of, the nearest, furthest north you get, and then start hopping lifts on different vehicles. And eventually I got a plane and got north. And then by hopping lifts on different vehicles, I found myself at 27 Brigade headquarters. Here we were, not very far from the River Yalu. They'd been in action and had come all the way up by road and fighting their way up from Pusan, chasing the North Koreans. It was a great brigade. It had come from Hong Kong and was commanded by Brigadier Code, who later became a Major General. Anyway, I found out from them how things worked. And it was that moment it suddenly got extremely cold. And the 27th Brigade were dressed in tropical kit. And here we were, struck by this cold weather. And they had to find clothing from everywhere they could, including fur coats they'd picked up from odd places, and kit. They didn't seem to have any cold weather clothing whatsoever. It rather reminded one of the story of the Crimean War, where they hadn't got the right kit, and this was exactly the same. They hadn't got the right kit at all, and everything was very cold.
So who was your equivalent in 27th Brigade?
He was a major. I know his regiment. He was an Argyle, and he was a fascinating chap to talk to. I don't know his name. He was Argyle and Southern Highlanders, and the RHQ, the depot of the Argyles, would tell you who it was.
But you went to him for advice?
I went to him for advice, yes.
Can you remember what he said to you?
Oh, I saw how he ran the thing. Sorry, I'm booking it.
No, that's all right.
He told me how to run the thing, and how his difficulties were. I do remember how they had a funny little tent as a mess and a bit of a building, and say, come and have something to eat, and the only thing they give me was some tin pears. I don't even ever had tin pears when it's below freezing, but it's not much of a meal. That's something I've never forgotten. Anyway, I got back to the 29th Brigade and rejoined them, and we moved up north, and we got well north of Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, and we still hadn't seen any Koreans, any enemy. Gooks, as we call, the Americans call them, G-O-O-K-S. And we were still moving north, and we'd pulled off the side of the road, when suddenly we saw a lot of vehicles coming from the north. And there were Americans moving south. We thought, this is very odd. And the troops by that time were having a little game of football by the side of the road. And they thought, oh, said, we're bugging out. And he said, well, what do you mean? Oh, he said, the Chinese have come in. And we're moving south. So,
did it seem a rout or what?
What?
Did it seem a rout?
It seemed more than a rout. It seemed they were coming back in large and very little movement at all. All streaming back in vehicles. And, of course, very narrow roads. And had there been any Chinese aircraft, they'd have smashed everything up. But there wasn't any Chinese air support. We had wonderful air support of our own, but they hadn't anything. And they didn't seem to have any artillery or much against us. Anyway, here was this large body of people coming back.
Did they seem to have been in combat? Did they have casualties with them?
That I don't know. I think they must have had a mini contact up north. 27th Brigade, of course, must have come back that time with them, but I didn't see them. Anyway, eventually we were told to withdraw ourselves, and 29th Brigade were actually the last people to come through Pyongyang, the capital. And still we hadn't seen the gooks. And back we came, and were pushed back right to a position north of Seoul, where we took up position with the Royal Ulster Rifles on our left and the Northumberland Fusiliers on our right front, and the Gloucesters were, I think, in reserve. And we held this position, and at that time, the great joke was, we said, the more spooks than gooks. And one began to think there weren't any, and what was going to come. However, we hadn't long to wait when the attack started on the Northumberland Fusiliers, who were attacked by a strong force. And this regiment, as I said, had come from Warminster. And they were able to carry out a set-piece attack, which they'd rehearsed at Warminster, against the Chinese.
Set-piece counter-attack?
Yeah, set-piece counter-attack. Just as well, because they managed to recapture their old position where they'd a lot of their kit. It was very difficult, you see. Some people had arrived and got all sorts of kit in their vehicles. Most people should have left their main equipment and stuff back in Pusan, which is our base in Japan. Should have been left back there, left on the ship and unloaded there, or got to back to base.
So, your brigade had gone into prepared positions, had they, or had they had to dig in themselves?
Oh no, we dug in ourselves on top of these different hills in front of Seoul, and they dug in, well dug in, but no wire or mines, but dug in, and they were attacked. And anyway, the Northumberland Fusiliers did a very nice attack and counterattack and drove the enemy back.
So were they driven out of the trenches and then recaptured them?
I'm not sure. All I know is they did an attack and a counterattack, probably on one company position, probably. Anyway, they had casualties, and that was our first contact. It was that time that the first Corps, United States Corps, which were known as I Corps, decided that withdrawal must take place back south of Seoul and south of the River Han. And so they ordered a withdrawal. Strangely enough, the American forces had in their history very little to do with withdrawal. Now, in British history, one of the phases of war we study considerably is the withdrawal. We're usually the weakest and have to go withdrawals. We're quite used to it. Strange enough, in American history, or tactical teaching at the staff college or infantry schools, little teaching is done on withdrawal. In fact, there are no phases of withdrawal rehearsed or used. And the general way of withdrawal was just to come back, what they call bug out, and let's go. And the result was that the Americans moved twice as fast as we did in the withdrawal. And whereas we have no move before, and all the standard phases of withdrawal, covering each other up right back by lines of withdrawal. The result was that when we withdrew, the Northumberland Fusiliers came back quite well, but the Royal Ulster Rifles were slow because they were, don't blame them in any way whatsoever, carried out their withdrawal in the recognised way. But the left flank, the Americans on the left flank, went there. And